content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Bahati Mutisia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazine. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Teen Vogue, The First Thanksgiving, Separating Myth from Fact. This article was written by Ruth Hopkins and published November 11th, 2020. This article is a part of In Session, the Teen Vogue lesson plan. Here in the United States, we've all heard the legendary tale of the first Thanksgiving, when pilgrims dined with natives in celebration of a bountiful harvest. It all started in November of 1620, when a group of 102 English religious separatists, known as pilgrims, joined by unaffiliated commercial entrepreneurs, arrived on the shores of North America in a ship called the Mayflower, at present-day Cape Cod. They'd planned to settle in Virginia, but were blown 500 miles off course. Unfortunately, like much of U.S. history, the narrative surrounding the landing of the Mayflower and what happened to the English settlers on board has been whitewashed, diluted, or just plain fabricated. On the 400th anniversary of that fabled landing at Plymouth Rock, let's dive into the reality of this famous event by sorting myth from fact. Myth. When the Mayflower arrived at Plymouth Rock, the landscape was devoid of human civilization. Fact. William Bradford, leader of the voyage, declared they discovered an era unpeopled, but when the pilgrims landed, Darius Coombs, co-director of the Plymouth Plantation, says there were some 70 Wampanoag communities in the area and an estimated 100,000 tribal members whose ancestors had been living there for at least 12,000 years. European trade ships had already been visiting the region for 100 years before the Mayflower sailed, but the pilgrims were the first who attempted to stay. In truth, upon disembarking, the pilgrims were met with the cleared fields and fresh water. The Wampanoag had moved to winter camp, but the pilgrims were aware of ongoing indigenous occupation because they dug up and used some of the Wampanoag's food stores. Myth. Pilgrims took pity on indigenous people and fed them. Fact. The pilgrims had no idea how to survive on the new land. They would have starved to death during the severe 1620 to 1621 winter if it weren't for the Wampanoag. They shared their provisions with the colonists and taught them how to hunt, fish, farm, and preserve food in their new environment. As Wampanoag Ninipashimet said, "We have lived with this land for thousands of generations, fishing in the waters, planting and harvesting crops, hunting the four-legged and winged beings, and giving respect and thanks for each and everything taken for our use. We were originally taught to use many resources, remembering to use them with care, respect, and with a mind towards preserving some for the seven generations of unborn, and not to waste anything." Myth. Thanksgiving was the name of the harvest feast pilgrims and indigenous people shared. Fact. While pilgrims did share a meal with the Wampanoag people, it wouldn't have been possible without their native teachers, and it wasn't called Thanksgiving either. Harvest feasts were a tradition that natives had observed from time immemorial. So it is native generosity that is the basis for the Americanized idea of Turkey Day. The origins of the holiday's modern name are actually quite grisly. Pilgrims and other European invaders warred with the Wampanoag and other local tribes after they settled in. An official day of thanksgiving kept in all the churches for our victories against the Pequots was proclaimed by Massachusetts Bay Governor William Bradford in 1637, and it was meant to memorialize the slaughter of about 700 Pequot men, women, and children. Myth. The indigenous people who interacted with pilgrims were extinct. Fact. The Mashpee Wampanoag people who first encountered the pilgrims were subjected to centuries of disease, starvation, and war, but they survived. They still inhabited Massachusetts and eastern Rhode Island, are a federally recognized tribe, and have about 2,600 citizens. Myth. The indigenous people who helped the pilgrims aren't being oppressed anymore. Fact. In spring of 2020, just as the Mashpee Wampanoag were getting hit with the COVID-19 pandemic, the Trump administration moved to disestablish their reservation, threatening their very existence. A federal judge found the Trump administration's decision arbitrary and capricious and ordered them to reconsider. In July, the U.S. House of Representatives passed H.R. 7608. It is an appropriations bill, but it includes an amendment that would stop the Interior Department from taking the Mashpee Wampanoag's land. The legislation now awaits a Senate vote. The Wampanoags are also seeking the return of the Wampum Belt of Metacom, one of their 17th century chiefs. When he was killed in the 1670s, his belt was sent to King Charles as a spoil of war. To the Wampanoag, the Wampum Belt is comparable to the crown jewels. Wampum is comprised of purple and white shells with whelk and quahog, and plays a crucial role in the tribe's culture. According to the Washington Post, the whereabouts of the Metacom's belt is currently not known. Myth. While colonization was an ugly chapter in American history, it's over now. Fact. Tribes in the United States are still dealing with the fallout of colonization, including the same indigenous groups that helped the people survive. As Malcolm X said of the black experience in the United States, "We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. The rock has landed on us." On Thanksgiving Day, 1970, the 350th anniversary of the Mayflower Landing, natives took back Plymouth Rock. Frank James, Wamsutta Wampanoag, gave a speech that discussed the suffering his people had endured after the arrival of the pilgrims and said that while many considered it a day of celebration to this country's indigenous, it was a day of mourning. He then led a protest on Coles Hill near Plymouth Rock, close to a replica of the Mayflower and a statue of the Wampanoag leader, Massasoit. American Indian Movement, AIM, leader Russell Means also spoke, and other AIM members boarded a replica of the Mayflower and later buried Plymouth Rock in dirt and refuse. That night, another AIM leader, John Trudell, returned and painted it red. Since then, natives and their allies continue to gather on Coles Hill in Plymouth on Thanksgiving Day to commemorate a national day of mourning. To many natives in the United States, Thanksgiving is a reminder of the genocide of millions of the indigenous ancestors and the theft of our lands because of colonialism. It's become a way to honor our dead as well as protest the continuing racism and tyranny that we are being subjected to even now. There are still natives who host family meals during this season, but that is because we've always held harvest feasts long before the pilgrims' arrival. Tribes are still under attack today. Natives live with historical trauma, crushing poverty on reservations, a lack of adequate health care, racism, police brutality, voter suppression, little representation, and an epidemic of missing and murdered indigenous women, and toxic pipelines being forced through our lands, among other pressing issues. We are still fighting for our treaties to be honored, for our human rights, and for our survival. Perhaps the holiday, like this country, can be salvaged. We shouldn't celebrate genocide, but we can honor those who were killed, elevate Native voices, and embrace that spirit of generosity that indigenous people shared with the Pilgrims. We can feed the hungry and shelter the homeless, and fund and advocate for Native causes and organizations. We can use this day to teach history rather than hide it. Instead of forcing school children to partake in embarrassing Thanksgiving plays based on the ugly stereotypes in colonial fiction, Native speakers and historians can come and educate them about Native culture. We can make this world what we want it to be. Create a more perfect union. The next article is titled, King Richard star Demi Singleton on playing the greatest athlete of all time. This article is by Caitlin McNabb and was published November 19th, 2021. The first time Demi Singleton met Serena Williams, it was a surprise. On the way back from a craft service run on the set of King Richard, Demi, who plays Serena in the movie, spotted a familiar figure in a nearby producer's tent and had to do a double take. Like any 14-year-old girl would, she played it cool until she could freak out alongside her co-stars, well out of Serena's earshot. We were filming a house scene. We got, "Oh my God, Serena's here. This is amazing." And a few minutes later, Serena walks into the house. Demi tells Teen Vogue, "I was trying not to bawl my eyes out." The young cast that makes up the Williams family lined up army style at attention as if they were about to meet the queen. In a way, they were. She comes in like she's like, "Hi, I'm Serena. Nice to meet you all," recalls Demi with a smile. And then she points to us and basically tells us which character we are. She goes, "You play Aisha. You play Venus." And then she finally points to me and goes, "And you play me." And I was like, "Yeah, I play you." That was probably my favorite moment on set. During that set visit, which happened right before the nation and the entertainment industry went on COVID-19 lockdown in the spring of 2020, Demi says she was able to spend a little bit of time with Serena. But for the most part, the actor had to find other ways to prepare for her portrayal of the greatest athlete of all time. King Richard tracks the 7 years in which unconventional and ambitious patriarch Richard Williams sets his plan in motion to catapult his two young daughters, Venus and Serena, into tennis stardom. Venus and Serena would soon become two of the greatest players the sport has ever seen. The film, which also stars Will Smith as Richard and Teen Vogue's cover star Sanaa Sidney as Venus, is one of the most highly anticipated family biopics in recent years and has already received immense praise from critics ahead of its release in theaters and on HBO Max on November 19th. Demi was cast as a young Serena Williams after a months-long audition process that she says allowed her to better understand her character. I was a little nervous because of who Serena Williams is and what she means to so many people, what she's accomplished, says Demi. She's not a made-up character. While this may be true, one could never detect Demi's nerves. Over Zoom, Demi is the picture of composure and self-assurance. When she speaks, there is no doubt that this is a role she was born for. And while watching her on screen, it's clear that performing is what she's meant to do, something she's always known she's wanted. Demi has been acting, singing, dancing, and performing music since she was about 4 years old, and has been professionally trained in the arts by some of New York's finest instructors. Though King Richard is her first feature film, Demi has acted on Broadway in productions like School of Rock, The Lion King, where she played young Nala, and appeared alongside some of Hollywood's best on camera, like Forrest Whitaker in the epics drama Godfather of Harlem. Demi's gifts are special and rare, but the young star has earned her keep through hard work, dedication, and due diligence. When pre-production started, really as soon as I found out that I got the role, I just went on the internet and searched up home videos, anything I could find on the internet, Demi says. There's so many videos of Serena playing now as an adult because she's the greatest of all time, but as a little girl, there's not so many. Videos of older sister Venus playing in her youth are more easily accessible due to Venus stepping into the tennis spotlight earlier than Serena, a trailblazing journey King Richard carefully explores. Once she started pre-production and filming, the family was very involved in this film, and so they would provide us, the cast, with the home videos, says Demi. Home videos helped Demi and Sanaya mimic the stances and movements of Serena and Venus off and, more importantly, on the court. Still, videos alone couldn't achieve the task of transforming two young actors into young tennis legends. I think tennis is probably one of the hardest sports I've ever played. I'm not exaggerating, Demi says, gravely serious. I think I was expected it to be so easy because the pros make it look so easy, and I thought it would be simple, but it was not easy. It took a lot of work to learn how to play like the greatest player of all time. Demi admits that even as a rigorous dancer and athlete, the intensive practices caused her to shed a few tears on the court. 3 1-hour tennis lessons prior to filming was all the tennis she had ever played in her life. Leading up to production, Demi and Sanaya were playing at least 1.5 hours of intensive tennis lessons sessions a day, Monday through Friday, and would sometimes even train for up to 3 hours. I was not ready at all for that pretty intense tennis training, but you know, everything worked out in the end, and now I know how to look like I play like Serena Williams, she said. And it's extremely convincing. Throughout King Richards, Demi plays tennis with an ease and athletic prowess that would have you believe it was the work of a body double. This can be traced back to Demi's passionate commitment to her craft, a characteristic she shares with the real-life Serena. According to Demi, they also share a really funny sense of humor, a trait she wanted to communicate clearly to the audience. King Richard basically shows the struggles that the Williams family went through just to get Serena and Venus to the point they are at now, Demi says. But because of that, there was a lot of sadness and disappointment, and a lot of things were hard for them. They were a family from Compton, trying to put two girls into a predominantly white sport and then make them the best at it. There was a lot of rejection and no's. Serena was the silly, the fun, the kind little sister that made everyone happy. I think that was really important to show, that even throughout, even with everything they went through, Serena was still able to find that fun side of life. Handling the Williams story with the grace and compassion that Demi's top priority. She wanted to ensure that she was doing not only Serena, but the entire Williams family justice. I think the one worry I did have while filming was that just making everything real and authentic, she says, thoughtful. I knew the family was going to watch it, so I wanted them to watch it and feel as if they saw a piece of themselves represented on screen. I wanted them to really enjoy it, because this is their life. It's not something that you take lightly. I really wanted them to like it. No, I wanted them to love it, and that was really important for me, she adds. King Richard is a story about nurturing greatness that will eventually mushroom into a level of excellence that becomes the gold standard. It's a film about lightning striking twice, manifestation, claiming victory, and claiming a stake in the world, something that black people, and black girls in particular, have been prohibited and discouraged from doing for centuries. It's a film that holds personal meaning for the Williams family, but will hold meaning for everyone who shares the unique underdog experience of simply being determined and black. To me, this film means that with a strong support system like the Williams family, with hard work and dedication and hope, you can really accomplish anything. Demi says, in earnest, even things that may seem like they're impossible, as seen in the film, Richard was trying to get his girls a professional coach and was turned down so many times. And I know for many people, that would just break a person. That would really discourage them and make them think that they were not worth it. But that didn't happen for Richard. He kept going. He kept pushing, and he helped create two of the best of all time. And along with his daughters, helped open doors for so many young black girls trying to go into the sport of tennis. Or not even just the sport of tennis, trying to do anything because of how black girls are looked down upon. With that being said, I think if you work hard and you're dedicated to what you do, really, you can do anything. Our next article is titled, Officials, Public Figures Call for the Investigation into Peng Shui's Whereabouts. This article was written by D. Elizabeth and was published November 20th, 2021. Naomi Osaka and Serena Williams are among the celebrities and athletes who have come forward to pose questions regarding the whereabouts of Chinese tennis star Peng Shui. CNN reports that Peng has not been seen in public since November 2nd, the day that the 35-year-old tennis star accused former vice premier Zhang Gaoli of sexual assault. Peng's allegations were reportedly penned in a now-deleted post on Weibo, a Chinese social media app. According to the BBC, the former vice premier has not yet responded to the accusations. In the wake of her disappearance, the United Nations has called for a full investigation into her whereabouts, demanding proof of the tennis player's safety. According to available information, the former world doubles number one hasn't been heard from publicly since she alleged on social media that she was sexually assaulted. Liz Throssell, spokesperson for the UN Human Rights Office, told reporters on November 19th per CNN. We would stress that it is important to know where she is and know her state, know about her well-being. The BBC reports that the Women's Tennis Association, WTA, was informed that Peng is safe and not under any physical threat, but they have yet to make direct contact with the tennis player. Public figures have also joined the chorus of official organizations demanding more information. Tennis star Naomi Osaka tweeted about Peng Shui earlier this week, writing, "Censorship is never okay at any cost. I hope Peng Shui and her family are safe and okay. I'm in shock of the current situation, and I'm sending love and light her way." Serena Williams also spoke out publicly about Peng, writing on November 18th, "I am devastated and shocked to hear about the news of my peer, Peng Shui. I hope she is safe and found as soon as possible. This must be investigated and we must not stay silent. Sending love to her and her family during this incredibly difficult time. Hashtag, where is Peng Shui?" Other world news players, including Novak Djokovic and Nicholas Mahut, have also publicly expressed concern about Peng's whereabouts, with Djokovic calling the entire situation horrifying, per ESPN. Steve Simon, chief executive of the WTA, has also demanded a full investigation into Peng's disappearance, as well as her allegations of assault, the BBC reports. CNN adds that Simon has stated the WTA is prepared to withdraw from China and lose multi-millions if their investigation is not conducted. "We're definitely willing to pull our business and deal with all of the complications that come with it," he explained. Because this is bigger than the business. According to ESPN, China's foreign ministry has declined to comment. Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian reportedly told reporters earlier this week, "I am not aware of the situation," adding that the topic is not a diplomatic question. Still, the demands for investigations and proof continue. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters on Friday that the White House is deeply concerned by the reports surrounding Peng. "We join in the calls for PRC, People's Republic of China, authorities to provide independent and verifiable proof of her whereabouts and that she is safe." And the last article, more news related, COVID booster shots approved for all U.S. adults. The FDA authorized COVID-19 booster shots for all U.S. adults. Pending CDC approval, the shots could be available this weekend. This is by Brittany McNamara, published November 19, 2021. On November 19th, the Food and Drug Administration officially authorized both Pfizer and BioNTech and Moderna booster shots for every American adult, drastically expanding the eligibility for extra COVID-19 protection. The New York Times reports that FDA approved booster shot for everyone 18 and older who received their second dose of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine at least 6 months ago as of Friday. At least 10 states have already authorized the boosters for all adults, but the FDA decision makes the expanded eligibility a nationwide policy. Pending agreement from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, booster shots may be more widely available by the weekend. The decision comes amid a growing number of COVID-19 cases across the country and just before the holiday season, when people will likely gather indoors. The expanded eligibility will also serve to eliminate confusion over who should get a booster, Peter Marks, MD, PhD, head of the FDA Centers for Biologic Evaluation and Research said, according to CNBC. Still, others are stressed that the importance of continuing to focus on getting the unvaccinated their initial doses. Currently, 82% of adults have had one dose, while 71% are considered fully vaccinated. Unvaccinated people remain at great risk of severe illness from COVID. According to the CDC data from August, unvaccinated people are 29 times more likely to be hospitalized as a result of the disease. Okay, we have reached the end of today's episode of Teen Magazine. Please be sure to listen next time. We hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Bahati Mutisia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.